We'll call to order the December 7th meeting of the Henderson County Environmental Advisory Committee. We don't have hard copies of the agenda, but did everyone get a chance to look at the agenda for today?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. Does anyone have any additions or edits on the agenda that Rachel sent out? We'll call it approved based on that. Let's see. So, bear with me. I'm getting back to my agenda here. first order of business, I believe, is welcoming our new member, Lucy. Lucy, welcome.
Thank you.
Don't believe what you heard about us. We're not all bad. That's right. You got it. Okay, here we go. All right, so outside of welcoming Lucy, we've got old business, which was our discussion topics. If memory serves, we, at our last meeting, went through discussion items and created some areas of focus. Thank you. So last meeting, just to give everyone an update on that or bring that forward, rather, is planning staff is going to give us periodic updates on the Greenway feasibility study. Rachel mentioned before we got started that John's meeting with the Greenway folks regarding the RFP for the feasibility study. And I think Kelly was working on the environmental health mosquito program education. Is she researching that, Rachel?
She said, hold on, let's see. She said she's happy to make contact with her person that she knows with the school system about recycling education, but she wanted to kind of narrow down what the ask would be. And so she said if y'all wanted to rehash that, she'd take it to her between now and the next meeting.
Okay. The other items we had from last meeting were a couple areas of research. I think Chris and Philip volunteered to look at low impact potential for best management practices. Have you guys made any progress on that or on your research?
I think we're prepared to talk about it. Okay. We at least know kind of maybe a next step,
okay.
Actionable
yeah.
thing to do.
Yeah. If you guys want to give us an update on that or what the actionable next step might be, that'd be great.
Chris, do you want
it? It doesn't matter to me.
Why don't you go ahead?
Hot potato.
Will you speak into the, grab the mic, please?
Would you like me to get up and walk around? Can you do the whole teacher maybe? Right on the
stand at the podium.
Yes, sir.
So, unfortunately, my boss came in my office as I was trying to leave, and I totally forgot to print these out and give them to you. But so I'm going to read them from my phone. I apologize. So Philip and I had a couple meetings where we got together, and we really sort of had an idea, we thought, going into it, what we were thinking we wanted to look at. And that after some logistics discussions and some quite philosophical discussions, we sort of narrowed down the focus of what we thought were good things to address from the committee standpoint, and where we thought we could may have benefit to the county in terms of water quality, especially primarily, I think, stormwater quality, but surface water quality issues. So I guess our main goal here was to really start out looking at capital improvement projects because those are county projects. I mean, we're not trying to write ordinances or tell people in the private sector or deal with permits or anything like that, so I'll go ahead and say that at the beginning. But, you know, there are capital improvement projects that are going on at the county level. And so I guess kind of what we were thinking was, it would be nice if we could have the if this committee could have some input on some of these projects. It's sort of a long-term goal. Okay, now obviously getting there is going to be a while, but as a long-term goal to get some input on these, and from a couple different ways. So, like, for instance, just to some of the things we could review would be, like, say, general site layout, some things, you know. What we talked about a lot was, in this process, who determines where the building's going to be? You know, who has the input? And I don't have the answers right now. This is what we want to kind of get the answers to, is who has the input, you know, on where this building needs to be, or why can't the building be turned this way, you know, to avoid this, or whatever, kind of general stuff. And when you look at that from a water standpoint, you're really talking about things like protecting buffers that already exist, you know, or minimizing the amount of surface, impervious surface, so therefore the amount of stormwater runoff. And if I use a word that you don't know what it is, then stop me, because sometimes I forget. Also, in looking at some of the sediment erosion control stuff that goes on during the construction process, as well as the actual post-construction sort of stormwater management. So these are just sort of general things that we think the committee or that members or that it would be nice to have input on when it comes to protecting surface water in relation to capital improvement projects that the county's undertaking. Okay, and I'm not saying that these things don't go on now. All right, it's just we don't really know the ins and outs of that. So, you know, how can we minimize that runoff? What alternative stormwater control measures are there? Used to be everybody called them BMPs, but I think I said this last time. I've heard that they're now called stormwater control measures and not BMPs. But, you know, so there's sort of a standard cookie-cutter list of stormwater management controls that are utilized, and there's a few of the more engineered type one, hard engineering ones that are utilized more than maybe some of the other, to use not the best word, maybe you have another word, Philip, but, you know, quote unquote, outside the box or alternative kinds of things like, God, help me out. I just went blank.
No, it's...
Like a constructed wetland, for instance, is one that I can think of off the top of my head, but there's lots of different alternatives you can do.
So you're getting into, like, some of the minutiae that we went down into.
I know. It's easy for us to do this.
Yeah. But I think just big picture. So I was just kind of scrolling through. It's RFP that's prepared for a feasibility study. So the county, like, has an idea, and they go out and hire consultants to help them. So this is just for an RFP, and it's a, you know, a six-page document that's thought out of John Mitchell and whoever else's head, and it's committee members such as we are here,
right,
that you're giving to a consultant and saying, help us with this so we have something to put in the ground. So I think what we're saying is, whether it's in the form of, you know, having someone present us a site plan, or it's something as simple as, like, being a stakeholder in such an RFP for a capital improvements project, it's just, like, As this committee, we feel like there are some constraints in a good way, like design constraints that help make a project better, that we could not impose, but, you know, suggest, and a figurehead helps funnel those down into something that is more concrete, whether it be an RFP or an actual common or a site plan, and then I think to trickle that all the way down to actually what our ask or what we want to garnish input or see what y'all think. Is, I think, the first step that would be having a conversation with Marcus, the city engineer or the county engineer, and or John Mitchell, or even Mr. Wyatt,
and our construction manager.
Sure, if he's at that higher level of preparing those kind of upfront documents,
yeah,
and just for us to all to understand, like, what that process is, and to see, you know. I imagine a lot of what we're saying sounds like we want things designed by committee, and that's not at all what we're after. We just kind of want there not to be any low-hanging fruit left unpicked. That's kind of a better idiom.
That's a better point, a better way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the same concept was where I'd like to go with energy management, energy efficiency. When we're putting in a new facility, obviously we want it to be as energy efficient as possible from the start.
you know, so
right. Makes sense.
Where does that all fit into the process? And
I think that what we were kind of beating around to was how do we make that, how do we become part of that process? And we sort of meet with Marcus, and he's the county engineer, if you don't know, and John, and whoever else, your construction manager, I don't know who that person
David
is.
Barry.
Okay, so what's the process? Here's what we do.
Sure.
John says, you know, we got authorization to do this from the commissioners. Here's what I do. Step one, step two, step three. Where can we go in a step, so to speak? Right? I mean, that's
exactly more or less. Yeah. And then maybe there's multiple points for which we could have input. So from the convoluted message that we just put to the group, do y'all have any? I'm most interested to hear someone that disagrees with my line of thinking.
No, I'm just going to comment in general. There was a Tuxedo Park that was constructed recently.
Yes,
and I live in the Tuxedo area, so. But I remember several meetings where the county, whether it was Marcus or the county, one of the people came and presented all the plans and this and that. And it seemed like they knew what they were doing. The question is, did they really have priorities on, besides for playground, the water management, the runoff? I'm sure they did the standard stuff, but who knows what else they were thinking of. Did they think beyond that?
This is just like a public presentation and an opportunity for the public to provide comment?
Yeah, there were several of them because they had to define the scope and how much money we had and all that other stuff. And
so was there an opportunity for, before you were on this committee, was there an opportunity for you to like formally submit a comment or a question?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. A couple chances.
Yeah, I don't know what the process is as far as, you know, what kind of list do we make on capital improvement projects based on need, based on want, based on budget, you know.
Oh, I don't mean which ones actually get
prioritized? I don't know how, but Marcus could definitely answer.
Yeah, that's even a step back that I think we'd be interested to hear.
Yeah.
Maybe we could put our weight behind
sure.
one that we thought should be higher up in the priority.
Sure.
I think the first question we need to ask this committee is are people willing to, is this something that as a committee we want to undertake to, you know, is this something that we're willing to do is to get involved and look at these?
Or even a more simple question. So the first simplest question would be, would y'all be interested in hearing how a capital improvement project gets prioritized and gets designed from the county's perspective of hiring consultants and how that site is laid out?
My answer would be yes, and it would not just from stormwater runoff issues, but perhaps efficiency as well. And perhaps they're already doing all the things we want. Mm-hmm. We may find out they're already thinking of that stuff, or maybe there's more they could think of.
My question is, have you looked at other counties to see how they interface with these types of developments? I know that this can't be an idea that only this county has had, to see how they've interfaced and what their process has been.
I don't have a straight answer to that. I have some thoughts. I think for any project, everyone designs to the regulation.
True.
So we have AMPR, all sorts of regulations, whether depending on where the site is, what its slope, if there's wetlands. So that is like the bottom, the
bare minimum.
Yes,
the bare minimum they have to do.
And then I could also imagine that something as large as a county has all kinds of people that want to have input on how money is spent. Mm-hmm. So that's really where our head has mostly been at.
But the scope, and excuse me for my ignorance, but this is my first meeting. Mm-hmm. The scope of what you guys are, or what we're trying to develop, is some type of environmental input prior to the construction of large projects. Is that right?
So, yes, in a way. But I'd take a step back and say the county spends money to construct things.
Sure.
We... we want to know, so there's a high school over here.
Right.
So we want to know why, was everything just solely based on its fights with the city and that bottom rung minimum level of environmental regulatory rules they had to follow? Were there other things that the architect like designed around trying to meet, you know, things to do with water? Like, so it could be something as simple as a section in an RFP saying we value X, Y, and Z, and an architect or an engineer can see that, and it, you know, gets those creative juices flowing in their head, and it, the end result being that thing that the county builds and pays for, the community gets a better product because of some input that we get in that project.
What's an RFP?
Or a request for proposal.
Okay.
So the county will hire engineers, consultants, planners to help them design things. Just like the RFP we were just talking about for the Akalawaha Greenway
mm-hmm.
extensions.
Mm-hmm.
The current RFP, I don't know, they'll pay a certain amount of money to get a report back that says, you know, here's the different ways it can go, here's what it'll cost. It's a planning document. But then beyond that, you have construction documents and
mm-hmm.
contract documents, all the mm-hmm. things that go into actually building that capital improvement.
Right. Well, I know, is it Mike who's stormwater management with the county? Is that, or is he
city?
Is there a counter part here in the county?
Natalie Berry is, she's under Marcus Jones, who's the county engineer.
Yeah, I know Marcus, and I know Natalie.
So that's just the thing. She is head down. Her job is to make sure everyone meets that minimum standard.
Yeah. Okay, but then, so what you're proposing here is that this group would have suggestions to enhance a project to make it more environmentally sound.
Well, it may not be that we are smart enough to make specific suggestions like run this over there.
No.
But it could be that when the RFP is put out, that it's designed in such a way that the bidders are asked to, what can you do to improve whatever environmental or efficiency issues? And that when your RFPs are, or the responses are evaluated, points are given for better efficiency, better environmental, and not just taking the lowest price.
Mm-hmm. But there's no enforcement process. I mean, you can make suggestions, but this committee can't.
No.
Okay. I just would think that this, something like this has been done in other counties that we could look at as a model. I mean, even
it may be done here.
Well, it's done in companies.
Uh-huh.
I've gone out for contracts before and asked for other things other than just the lowest price.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, what else can you do, either for community involvement, for environmental stuff, or for whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to see if Marcus is free right now to come over? I don't know if he is, but
is
I can
that,
see.
Is that a text message, or are you gonna?
Yeah,
walk
I can
out?
Text him. Yeah.
If he could do it, then this would be on the spot.
Well, I think if you just explain the rundown, like what you just said, that you're looking for qualifications or conditions to be put into an RFP that enhance X, Y, and Z, and that's something that you
I think, remind me your name again?
Lucy.
I think to Lucy's point, that this has probably been done before. We don't know what this is. Like, so just hearing from Marcus, like, what the process looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have their priority list, and they have top three, and they see they can get money to add this one, so that one goes to the top of the list, so then it starts. So,
mm-hmm.
like, is the first step Marcus and John Mitchell putting their heads together and, like, scoping an RFP and then giving that to staff, and they actually write the document. So we just want to see how that looks.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's just really just two heads together scoping a document, like, maybe they could call us and...
But it's also our budgeting office and our administration office, and if it needs to be a school, there's a whole lot of consideration that goes into it, and that's what I don't know is where the like right now we're building, which I'm sure you've seen over in Balfour, we're having a new emergency services headquarters under construction. That was county property, so I don't think it's very typical for the county to go seek out property to purchase and put things on. You know, it just depends on what the use is and what the need of that facility or thing might be.
Yeah.
Because it's not like we have to finance money to go and purchase property. So it's not like
sure.
we have revolving funds to just go do things all the time. So there has to be some priority as far as, well, is it a school thing that we need to really think about? Or, you know, I'm sure it also depends on which part of the county it's on, it's in, and things like that.
And some of that's going to be very project specific.
Exactly. That, and I don't think it will ever be some formal. I don't know if it could be some formal. Yeah.
Marcus is coming over now, so get your questions together. And
so are you
did you warn him, or are you just telling him to come over? And
I just
visit?
Said we have some questions. Can you please come over?
Why are you spending so much money, Marcus?
So we're thinking, for lack of a better phrase, kind of best practices around how you create less impact with structures or improvements. Is that?
I want to let Marcus, let's not give him a preconceived notion, and I'd like to ask him and say, you know, the county has, I'm sure they have capital improvement projects prioritized on back order, right? 10 like, right. Multi-million dollar things that are going to happen over the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. So how do they decide which one actually gets money committed to it? Mm-hmm. And then once that happens, how does it go from an idea on it, from the commissioners and the county manager to construction drawings from an engineer?
Gotcha.
So that's at some point in there, there's a lot of decisions made, a lot of like little constraints that are putting on. When I say constraint, it's a design constraint is a good thing. If you've got a, you know, 100 acres and you say, I want a farm, it's like, what's the designer going to do? He's like, do you want it to be like a farm down by the river, or do you want to be up on, mm-hmm. on a mountaintop? There's like all kinds of decisions that can be made. So if we had some sort of input to help guide the designer, still meeting the minimum regulations, not trying to run prices up, but just putting their head in a, you know, another little thing to put in their head to guide the project mm-hmm. into something that's better for the county as a whole.
So overall, you're looking at sustainability of new projects. Is that what you...
Okay, yeah, so I guess...
And I look at like Sierra Nevada, who is Leeds or whatever it says is very high recognition because of the way the building was constructed, the low impact to the environment, and the ongoing sustainability efforts and things like that. So it's not just designing the project and getting it over the years. What's
yep.
the carbon footprint of this particular project, too? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Leeds.
So in those, is it Leeds? Or something.
No, that's just LEED. It's a certification program that takes a lot of things into account.
Yeah.
It's like all things green, water, air quality.
Yeah. So it seems to me like there are some models there. I know that that's a lofty model, and there's a lot of money in Sierra Nevada to be able to do that kind of project. But, you know, I just think that some of this information is already there.
There's also Energy Star for buildings, so like you can build to certain standards, but not go for that certification. Or
so I want to. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
You go first. I'm not gonna forget. I promise. You go first.
I think that to your point about Sierra Nevada is a good example. I've been out there a lot of times, and they've had spent a tremendous amount of money. However, they don't have any more money than other companies. The difference is that they place priorities on those things mm-hmm. when they were designing the project and scoping the project initially. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that we're suggesting things or we're saying that we want to make sure things can improve the cost of our money. We just want to say when the priorities are what's important to the people of the county as we're designing capital improvement projects. Mm-hmm. Well, we as a committee can have some and say,
actually, that's a perfect, so off of what you're saying, that's a perfect example. New Belgium versus Sierra Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact same idea. They want a brewery in Western North Carolina, but they're totally different. They're both big, expensive breweries. One's in an urban setting, one's in a rural mm-hmm. setting.
Yeah.
It's like, and that's totally dependent on what the stakeholders, what constraints they gave their consultants to help them decide where to put
mm-hmm.
put the plant.
Mm-hmm. And as they prioritized each of those projects, they would have different constraints based on the specifics of the project.
Right.
So it's really hard to write
a hot seat for either side of me. Either one.
I'm tricky, please.
You've chosen.
Okay, well, I borrowed.
No, I'm borrowed.
So I'll let Philip.
Do you want me to ask the question?
Yeah, I'll let you pose a question. Philip and Chris have been doing some research on a discussion item that came up at our last meeting. So, they need some expert advice.
Well, if Rachel doesn't have the answer, it's
I was gonna say you're the closest thing we had.
To the
I said there's capital improvements project stuff that I don't know the answers to. So it was either going to be you, John's in a meeting, or David Barry, and I don't know where he is. So.
Okay.
Thanks for coming on short notice.
No problem.
So our general question is, the county spends money on capital improvements projects. What is the process for deciding what project gets committed to and actually constructed? And then once that commitment is made to construct something, what does the input look like from the county as a whole to the designers that design that project? So it's kind of got multiple layers. You select an idea, then you figure out where the idea is going to go, and then you design the site that the idea is on. Mm-hmm. So we just wanted to understand that whole process.
Yeah, now, the majority of the capital expenditures, as you probably, come from the school system. So they prioritize and then express their needs to the commissioners, because the county government is responsible for providing the facilities for the for the county school system. The state pays the salaries, except for maintenance staff. The county pays those. So the school probably has a priority system, and then it mixes into the county's budget process based on available funds and that sort of thing. And a lot has to do with, I guess there's a priority of need that the commissioners discuss and determine what projects need to happen in a priority order. And then the available money to do those projects also is another piece of the puzzle, if that makes sense. And a lot of times that has to do with the debt service that is available. So in order to maintain a low tax rate and not increase taxes to do capital projects, we'll have existing debt service like to pay for the jail. When that debt service, $100,000 a year or whatever, comes off, is paid for, then it opens up availability for more debt service to do more capital projects. And that's kind of, Larry, when you think that's a lot of ways it happens? Yeah. Now, as of recent, the board has undertaken a considerable amount of capital projects. And that's what triggered the tax rate increase last year, 5 cents. Least of which wouldn't be the Hendersonville High School, $55 million project.
Not the least of which.
Not least of which, correct. I'm a numbers guy, not a words guy. So that, in a short, and capital projects are start at the department level, when addressing needs for space and that sort of thing.
So who keeps this master priority list? Steve Wyatt?
Yes. The budget office keeps it, and stuff will come up from the departments every year, and then,
And the way you're describing it is like there's one stream coming from the school system, and then there's other county needs,
mm-hmm.
and they're kind of kept separate, but then when they commit to one, it's like...
It's all mixed together when you start finding the money to do it. Now, there's a third stream of need also, and that's the community college. We're also responsible for funding the community colleges. County Government 101.
So do you think that we could request Steve Wyatt, show us what's coming down the pike over the next 10 years, the actual priority list? Would he be able to rattle those off?
The budget office would have a handle on what, the anticipated needs were for the finance, for them to budget into the process.
So that is something that...
I don't know if there's a formal 10-year... Steve kind of shies away from doing master planning processes. A lot of times those generate needs that, that you got to find money to spend. So it's not a process like that exactly, but there is definitely an identification of needs and a justification of the needs, and then when those are met, then they're plugged into the finance process. So you identify the need for a new high school. Well, that's a good example. The high school need land was purchased 3 years ago.
So let's actually back up a little bit higher view. So a project is selected, and we can use the high school as an example, but just something is selected to say, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to commit to this $50 million, $30 million, $100 million, whatever it is. So from that point, what happens next? Is it
the commissioners determine how to pay for it, and if they can delay the project.
Well, before you can even determine how to pay for it, there has to be some sort of scope in mind.
Yes. I see what you're saying.
We're interested in the scoping.
Yes. Of the project. Well, we have an architect and rector, and these are for building projects. The county does other sewer projects and other things too, but they definitely fall under the same. Yes, we would get a design professional involved to scope and then cost estimate the project.
But before you can even call a design professional, you have to have words, you have to have an idea to provide that professional.
Yes, and some of those projects may come out of a facility need study or a space study. That consultant that works for us a lot is Solutions for Local Government, Steve Allen, and we're about to do a jail facility need study. And that will identify, not only the capacity of the jail, but the different aspects of the jail. For example, the need for, they've identified the need for, with more female inmates, it's not only, hasn't really affected the bed capacity, but it's affected other areas that, in the jail, like the medical area, that sort of thing. So Steve's going to go in, interview the stakeholders. Well, not all the stakeholders. The inmates probably won't get interviewed, but the detention center staff, and then he'll bring his knowledge from other, specifically North Carolina facilities, into the mix and determine, what kind of needs are going to be needed, and then he'll phase that in. Now, and that's certainly how the engineering projects happen. We do 10-year master plans. It used to be required by the state. It's not required anymore, but we definitely still do them. And then the jail is going to trigger an expansion project, I'm sure, and that may be phased or that may be one big project. So that would be the planning phase. So your project's typically broken up into planning, design, permitting, and then, construction. So the planning phase is probably what I skipped over, and that would be a facility need study or some type of master plan. But we do not have a countywide master plan, but the budget office definitely has their hands on, the three entities that have facility needs and then how that marries in with our budget.
So there is a list at this point. The budget office would have a list of projects they're considering at this point.
I don't know if it's a formal list or I'm not exactly sure.
How would we find that information?
I can find out for you. I can find out for you.
And they probably won't be exactly prioritized, but it'll be like the people that keep asking for upgrades or.
Yeah, the schools might have their list, and then the college has their master plan. The college does do a master planning process, and I'm not sure if the schools do or not. And then we kind of slip in projects when the schools and the
so those are college requests. Those, at this point, those are requests that you're talking about. What about projects that are actively being proposed and considered? I mean, you would have a list of that.
They're part of the approved budget. So mm-hmm. Once a project is, a project can be a real project when it gets funded for a study or mm-hmm. a design or certainly construction. And when I say funded, it means it's included in that year's budget. For this year's budget that's going right now, the high school's design is budgeted and possibly some of the construction. The construction for the innovative high school was budgeted, and the design for Edneyville Elementary is budgeted. They will probably move into construction, so there's probably some construction budget in there too. So we'll anticipate starting right now for July the 1st, where the projects will be, you know, will they be in design, will they be in the construction, and how much money needs to be allocated for whatever phases the project goes through the next, that year, that budget year.
So in the design phase, how's it determined how much general efficiency will be put in the design, or how much water quality?
Mm-hmm.
Other than obviously there's a minimum required by regulations and law, but is there?
Yeah. Well, we like to call them performance measures, and the board has given us direction to include in capital projects money-saving measures, which have typically would have generated a green building criteria, platinum LEED certification, but the board has not. We went through LEED certification for Hillendale, I think, but we haven't for any of the facilities since then. And, we would have, architects tell us we would have met the criteria for a certain level of the LEED certification, but we did not pursue the actual certification process because it costs money and there wasn't no value to the board. But I guess the point is they are interested in those performance measures and facilities that have cost savings associated with that would definitely pay for themselves. So they're more, the measures are based on
budget
a financial
neutrality,
model.
Basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know of, any measures that are taken, environmental measures that are taken that don't save money. You know, that makes sense. Probably not.
Probably some that are more expensive that you could do.
Yeah.
That, you know, we're going to go down to a lower level, but try and do some of those qualifications on the building or something.
Yeah.
But I think what we're talking about are the things that are, what I think of in particular, are things that are less quantifiable, that don't fit into like the LEED, you know, radio buttons that you fill out, things about siting and like, in my experience with LEED stuff, they're very fine-tuned on building materials and the actual structures that are on a site, whereas the landscape itself and like decisions such as we were discussing, breweries were deciding to come to Western North Carolina, and two very similar amounts of money were spent on New Belgium and Sierra Nevada, and how drastically different those end results those are.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just trying to think of it in a much bigger picture, the site itself, and we can advocate for more energy efficient buildings, but there are a lot of nuance. There's a lot of nuance in site design.
Yeah.
So we wanted to see like what advice do you and Steve Wyatt and the leaders of the county, what do you direct the people that you've hired to be the architects and engineer for a site? How do you direct them to give you something back to build?
It's cost driven. And a lot of the land is.
But I think that I understand that it's cost driven. Everything is cost driven. But New Belgium spent more money than Sierra Nevada did, and Sierra Nevada has more land and approached things in a much different way than New Belgium did. So
New Belgium used a brownfield site that had a lot of money spent before they could start building, which is very admirable.
Yeah, so before you can even make decisions about money, there's decisions that you make about like what you're doing and what you're asking the architects to give you back cost estimates on.
Typically, the planning phase cost estimates are just based on benchmark figures per square foot for certain facilities. So those kind of dollars are all captured in that square footage benchmark cost of similar projects that they've determined as industry standard numbers.
I think you're kind of asking about the scoping, right?
Yeah, so before you enter into a contractual agreement with a consultant for the planning stage. You have the idea, and then you have you're spending money on consultants. We're looking at that time in between there, for like, you know. So what? How did you decide what to do with the high school? Like before you even hired that architect, what did you say to the architecture firm, the folks in Charlotte? I think they're from
Asheville.
So like, what did you give them? You gave them an RFP, I suppose, or was there a feasibility study beforehand about should the school go back on the same property?
Well, each project is going to be unique.
You see, there's an architect of record. What is that?
Architect of record is, the architect is Clark Nixon, and they were hired a couple years ago to be our architect of record, which is all of our architecture services that happen over the next 3 years go to them. So we're working with one entity instead
kind
of
like
a
retainer.
Instead of a different architect, instead of doing an RFQ for each project, we do an RFQ for an architect of record, and they do all the projects. RFQ, you hire, in the state of North Carolina, you have to hire professional services, architects and engineers, based on qualifications, not price. You select one based on qualifications, then you negotiate the price. You know, each project is going to be different. The high school was the location was set, but for example, and really for Edneyville Elementary, the location was set. For the emergency services headquarter building, we did a pretty good extensive search to try to find property, and it ended up that the school's property at Balfour, you know, was the best area cost-wise and also location-wise, because you're a unique aspect of that project was that the head EMS base is going to be located there, so it has to be in a certain location in the county in order to keep the response times the same and everything. So we had a circle where we had to locate a property within, and then you had that cost and what was the best options on that.
Well, when you met with the architect, okay, so you had the site, mm-hmm. Okay, that's the logistics determined that, right? And then you met with Clark Nixon. How did you all come about with here's what we need this to look like, here's what we're looking for as an end product, that then they therefore take into design?
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking for how, and just kind of general information, because I don't understand the process either
on
this level, but, you know, this is what's important to us. This is what's important to us. You know, and it may be feasibility studies, but are there other methods? I mean.
This might help. When a project's been budgeted, I guess the first step in hiring the architect is for them to submit a proposal. Even though they're the architect of record, we still have to generate a contract. So the architect develops a proposal with a cost estimate, and we'll look at the cost estimate and the fee compared to that, and then the scope.
Okay.
Of that.
We're zeroing in on it. So how does
he know?
Well,
it'd be helpful if you just tell me what you're talking about.
How does
about
he know to give you a cost estimate on a school or the Balfour Center? How does he know? How does he know what he's giving the proposal for?
Oh, I mean, we tell him.
You generate data. You give them data on occupancy and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there has to be data generated for him to come up with any kind of plan.
Yeah,
or her.
It depends on what the school system has, their needs, and
right.
Enter that information to the architect. And
who generates that information? Who actually is the one talking to the architect, giving them?
It's typically the stakeholders that are involved in developing the proposal. When I say stakeholders, the emergency services headquarters, the emergency services folks were part of that. It's usually myself or John Mitchell are also in there to provide some consistency among the different projects, but the project-specific information usually comes from the department head or the school system or the college. College is different in that the state construction office gets involved, and so all the projects are also managed by the state construction office, which makes them take twice as long. Don't tell.
Oh, there's no shocker there.
No, they lament it as well. It has some usefulness to it. Yeah, I guess.
So I could imagine that if you have, who runs the jail? What's that figure?
Sheriff.
The sheriff.
Yeah.
So the sheriff is saying, you know, he gets the green light to be the main point of contact to create this proposal for an architect. That sheriff's concern is going to be, you know, the things that we talked about, the things he's been complaining about. There's not enough facilities for the women that are there. Maybe there's some, it's going to be about all the deficiencies.
And a lot of, yeah, and the deficiencies are typically going to be associated with inspections from the state. A lot of like the jails run under a permit with the state, so they are inspected, and a lot of projects are generated from deficiencies from the state inspection.
So I guess what I'm seeing is, you know, you have an inclination to think that they might have to expand the jail, change parking. I don't know how that works up against the railroad, but there might need to be some property purchase. I'm not saying that that's a trigger by any means, but like the site layout is going to change. The sheriff isn't concerned about the site layout or the fact that he may trigger some stormwater rules that might happen. He's only concerned about programming, his program.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about is site planning.
Yeah, and that's where I think John and I come in, and we kind of, you know, I wouldn't say reining in is the right word, but...
No, but somebody needs
but
to
there's an old, there's
think
a,
about...
Yeah, there's what you want and what you need, and, you know, we try to work as a team to try to take care of all the needs that the stakeholder has and still maintain a budget and keep it you know, as frugal as we can. Because Larry's keeping up with us. So.
So cost seems to be the driver in all of the planning and design. I mean, that's what I'm hearing over and over. It's not as much a focus on green products or sustainability or carbon footprint. It's cost.
Yeah,
which
but
is true for all of us because we all have to work on a budget.
Yeah, but I will tell you, there's the analogy with LEED building is pretty strong because you can do a lot of things in that process and save money in the process of doing them. So it's a win-win. It's a no-brainer to do them.
And likewise, there's things on the site that don't LEED doesn't. It's hard to get things LEED on a site, but if you're doing something with a parking lot, and the county's going to pay for this big, expensive underground thing that treats stormwater. Like, that's a big piece of heavy equipment that has to be maintained, and maybe your engineering firm is fine with just doing that and doesn't see the need to think about other ideas and just does this thing that's easy for them to say, put this filter here.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen. I mean, the only reason we would... The law enforcement center has underground stormwater devices and the only reason why you do that is because the above ground stormwater devices, you don't have room for them. So you either have to buy land or you have to put them underground. And that's a cost issue. But it's also a permitting issue because the permitting requires that capacity, treatment, and retainage. Where it goes is usually the least expensive way to address it, but if you have to bring it underground, that's a way to do it without losing parking spaces or having to buy more property.
But it's not always a clean-cut answer until you look into it.
Correct.
So I think I see that as being one of the things that we could say, well, can you keep it above ground? Is there a way to have...
Well, a lot of... And it might be helpful to understand the design process, too, because we do get a lot of input in it. So the architect will typically does the design in phases, and the first one is the schematic phase, which is like a 10% design. So you'll get the shell of the building or the layout or a real rudimentary design... Give it to the stakeholders and to myself or John's construction manager, David Berry, and review those plans. A lot of times we'll tell the stakeholders, just try to, conduct your daily business as if you're walking through the building and determine if this layout works. And then they'll progress to a 50% design development, is what they call a phase, where you get a lot more detail worked in. for the stakeholders to look at and for us to look at. And I'm obviously not looking at it from a school perspective, from how you're going to teach kids. I'm looking at it from an engineer's perspective on the site work and you know, and that sort of thing.
And a cost perspective.
Are you looking at a great neutrally graded site, or are you can it be? And you're got a big fill site, and you could do it neutral graded and that sort of thing. You know, things like, you know, you have a underground stormwater system, but we could have real estate available over there, and we don't need that.
I think that, I mean, so you have just ran across one thing in particular that interests us, is like how those decisions are made, and it sounds like it's probably those site decisions are falling onto you to look at and direct the consultant?
Yeah, the project management staff. Yeah, whether it's me or John's folks. I do a little bit of facilities, but do a lot of the sewer and solid waste projects. Yeah. Sure. But you also have, you know, you're also affecting that by hiring a good architect, you know, that's got a good qualifications and a good history. And there was a big, long process of hiring the architect and checking references and checking qualifications against, you know, and against the other people that were submitted statements of qualification and then interview process. So, and that's one of the advantages of an architect of record is, you know, they know they're going to be doing the next project, and they're going to take a project through construction and get feedback from the contractors about the architect's work and how successful or not successful the budget. So it's somewhat of a correcting process, knowing that they're going to be doing multiple projects with you, not just
you develop
wonder.
Develop a relationship, and they kind of know what you want.
Yeah, yeah.
They know that you would prefer something other than an underground thing, whatever the issues are.
Yeah, but I guarantee you the architect working on things that are beyond my knowledge and David Berry's knowledge. So there is a leap of faith that the architect's acting in the best interest of their client, and they're professionals. You know, that's what, you know, they've got their respective licensing boards, whether engineers or architects, and are held accountable for doing that kind of stuff. It's so far we've I would say Chad with Clark-Nix is probably the best architect I've worked with, and certainly when the county he does a real good job. Doing a lot of work for us too, though, and getting a lot of his attention. That always helps when you're a big fish in the pond instead of a little small client. And then after the design development, they go into construction drawings. So that's where you get less input from the stakeholders, and it's just more of an architectural exercise where they're generating construction drawings that go out to bid. That whole process, the bidding process, is if it's over $500,000, it's heavily structured by the state statutes with as far as advertising and the amount of time stuff takes. And also depends on the type of project. Recently, we started doing construction manager at risk projects where a construction contractor, the GC, is selected early on in the process, well before construction, based on qualifications, just like the architect is. And the contractor is paid a lump sum fee for their involvement in the design process. Is the design that the architect's generating constructible? Is it they're checking the estimate? So they're intricately involved in the design process, and then when it goes to construction, hopefully you have a smoother project. So instead of design, build, bid, like your traditional type of procurement process, the general or the construction manager at risk actually bids, but they're only bidding the systems or the sub parts of the project. So maybe they're bidding the foundation might be one bid, and some contractor might get that, and then they bid other aspects of the project. But since the construction manager is hired, They're providing the oversight over all the different subs that are on there. So it's you're bidding out the sub work. You're not bidding out the overall job like you typically would. That doesn't save money, in my opinion. But it
doesn't?
Doesn't. It, but it definitely, I think, gives you a much better quality project because you have identified one aspect of that is at the end of the design, the construction manager risk identifies a guaranteed maximum price, GMP, and if it goes over, the project goes over that, they're liable for it, not the county. So you know there is a accountability in that regard. But the construction manager at risk has been involved in the project for months up to that time, so they know what's going on, and they're not making up a number. And I think it gives you a much better quality project, and it probably saves some time because you've got a bidding process that's pretty lengthy in a design bid build traditional project. But I think most important is the quality you get. You've got a contractor looking after contractors, and that they kind of speak each other's language and know what to look for. But you got the head contractor's on the payroll, so to speak, and he's not out doing low bid shenanigan kind of things, you know. But he knows all about the low bid shenanigans and is able to run interference for you. I don't feel like I've maybe not answered a.
In fairness, we've been, yeah. I think our questions are kind of high level, so we haven't been
intentionally broad.
No. I mean, and I could talk. I can talk about it. Each project's different. There are different nuances with each project. Like locating the ambulance, the head ambulance place brought a unique aspect to that project. The moving the 911 center had all kinds of unique things involved in it. When you pick up the phone and you want to hear, this is 911, what's your emergency? Not Domino's Pizza, how can I help you? And right. So that was 50% structure and 50% technology. It was really, really strange project, and had to bring in some special folks that understood that.
And the cancer center was also a good example of bringing lots and lots of entities to
the table. The 2-ton door on the linear reactor. What did Steve call it?
The thing in Back to the Future.
It's a linear accelerator.
There was a big deal just to get the antennas transferred off this building to the next building.
Yeah, that's a
big deal.
Zoning permits. Permits are definitely a big part of the projects, and that's where a lot of the environmental aspects come in, is by what's, I would say a building code is the least safe building you can build. I mean, we don't strive to meet the building code. We do better than the building code. But, the environmental permits are, pretty high level and achieve a pretty significant level of protection. We've got erosion control permitting, stormwater permitting, and then you have Corps of Engineer and water quality permitting if you're impacting streams, and then the utilities all have permits, and so it's pretty. That's a significant part of an engineer or an architect's, specifically engineer for engineering projects. It's not just building the sewer line; it's building the sewer line that's friendly to the environment, where is a significant part of their considerations.
I think from our point of view, once the decisions are made and those permits are, the consultants after pursuing those permits and they receive permission, they get the regulator's approval and they have the permit, nothing can really change in the project because you've gotten the permit and you tell them what you're going to do, unless there's something in terms of a big programming change, a big wastewater change, something. So what we're looking at is before that permitting stage, in the planning stage, and I think this is kind of just our closing question, and you don't even have to answer us now, would be, and it sounds like it's just with you and John Mitchell, is there any opportunity for us to provide some guidance, some have some input on the individual projects that get the green lights?
Always opportunities for input in the projects. There's public comment and ability to do that. And then the time to do that would be during one of those phases that the architect goes through, whether it's the schematic design or the design development phase. Just brainstorming.
Like I said, we don't have to have an answer now.
Everything's done on a pretty tight schedule, so they would need to be, it would need to happen quickly.
I'm hearing you say, yeah, that'd be good. You don't know where it would fit, and you realize that we don't meet, even on a monthly basis, so
yeah,
it'd be hard to fit us in.
Yeah, and it'd probably be better generating some type of facility construction policy or project policy on what y'all would like to see, and then staff can incorporate, the board approve it, staff would make sure that's incorporated into the project planning phases.
Something, some sort of template that you could apply as opposed to every project.
Yeah. Well, something like a LEED certification or like y'all see merit in a silver LEED certification, either actually getting the certification or just the architect's opinion that
designed to it. Yeah.
That is designed to that. Because I can tell you right now, the board's not interested in paying $45,000 a project to have a plaque.
I think the public kind of agrees with them on that.
Yeah,
you're doing good.
Yeah, definitely.
You don't need the medal.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I see merit to that. For some folks, that makes a big deal. Like when I'm sitting across the table from Ken Grossman trying to get them to come into Henderson County and told him that, we've got LEED certification on a Hillendale Elementary School, that's impressed him. But that he's not everybody's like him, obviously. So.
Yeah,
that's right.
But that's kind of why we're here. I think we think a lot like Ken Grossman. He's the CEO of Sierra Nevada.
Yes.
That's kind of as public having influence on government. Like it's just that exact thing. Like we are the Ken Grossman folk without the money.
Not having thought about it more than 5 minutes, but I think some type of policy that was applied to the procurement of facilities and projects is probably something that the board, we certainly couldn't get into a project where y'all review the plans and y'all want this, that, and the other. Then we go to the board and say this is this, that they want, and it costs this, or it reduces the project by this.
Yeah.
And
if we're slowing it down and increasing the price,
and then you got Rocky over here that needs a headquarters for I can see some problems there. But a policy statement that the board approves, and then John and I and whoever's managing the project and make sure that it's implemented, and that's more of the way a lot of government works anyway. And we'd already kind of do that. They give us that. They give us a scope. They approve the scope.
Who's the
board.
Yeah.
So they will approve the engineer's proposal, which has a scope on it. And, of course, they approve the budget. And so those are the guidelines that we work under. And then if it's a certain level of, the project's identified, budget's identified with a contingency portion of the budget, and there's some leeway to do changes as long as it's within the contingency, but at some point there may need to be changes that are made that go back to the board. That's typically how. But once you get the project started, you really want to try to you want it to keep progressing, because if it starts getting delayed, then you're costing money.
That's why we wanted to hear from you, how it progresses, because we realize that meeting, even if we do meet once a month, like that's a whole 30 days for someone to wait just to present something.
Policy statement, recommended policy statement sounds like a good idea.
So would you have maybe some sort of template or something? You say policy statement, I don't know about the people around me, but I don't know.
What I was going to suggest is if you wanted to, I mean, we could definitely find examples from other communities that have something like that. And you could go so far as to break it down into categories to say, you know, as the EAC, we recommend considering but not limiting to energy efficiency, XYZ, water, stormwater, XYZ, pollinator, planting, landscaping. I mean, you could break it down, or you could just say, you know, we support the process that exists, and we recommend that you, I mean, you can take it to a very, very deep, detailed level, or you can keep it very high level and just make a statement that says, we support what you're doing, carry on. But it sounds, what I'm kind of hearing you say is that there's interest in drilling down to make sure that these site design plans and layouts are as, you know, efficient as possible, or whatever, you know, adjective you want to. So we could definitely do some research and figure out how other communities maybe address this. I'm sure that this exists out there. Can't imagine that some of this
happens. You know, the LEED or the Green Building Council all have that type of thing as a good place to jump off of. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know.
And probably some of the state building code would have some stuff in it, you know, some other things like that. So you could really talk about this the whole rest of your year as EAC, and it would take months to come up with something too detailed. But
yeah, I would start with find a jurisdiction that's got something already.
Yeah. Is there a timing element of this, Marcus? Like, is it good to propose something like this to the board for consideration, say, when they're looking at budget or out of cycle for budget? You have any insight into that or recommendation?
I'd work on y'all's schedule. And then
he wants to see it before he recommends that we send it to.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, I'd like to. I mean, that's certainly what, you know, that's y'all's prerogative. I'd work on it. And then I can, budget time's probably not the best time to introduce that. So it would be after budget. You know, we're just kicking off the budget process, and the staff's heavy into budget right now through February, and then the board and the manager's office are pretty heavy into it from February to May. And that happens every year.
Thanks for giving us your counsel on the process as is.
Yeah, thank you so much, Marcus.
I hope we stumbled into an answer. But now, y'all want an update on the trash? I can talk for another 4 hours. Trash volume's up. TVs are down 30%.
Shipped off. How many tons of paint?
And 8 tons of paint from September to November.
Wow.
8 tons. That's like a dump truck load of paint, which is great because that's not in the landfill. That's people paying $2 a gallon to recycle paint. Yeah. I think that's pretty extraordinary. We've got a lot of committed people.
Did we perform above what we had expected or projected in those recycling programs?
Yes, and also hauler recycling was up like 1,000 tons. It was up quite a bit. I'm not sure why. Did a hauler start bringing us some material that they were taking to the MRF or something?
Who's a hauler? What's a hauler?
Hauler is a private The county, we don't do in-house hauling, so there's about 15 private hauling companies like Republic or Waste Pro, and then smaller ones like McMinn and Mavens.
But they don't take the South Carolina themselves. They come. They have to come to y'all.
Correct. Well, they don't have to, but we take recycling from haulers, and then we transfer it into a larger truck and take it up to a MRF, materials recovery facility.
Mm.
And then they separate it and take it for market kind of thing. But we do generate a little bit of revenue from that material. So depending on the value of the recycle, sometimes the haulers will take it straight to the MRF because the MRF's paying more because we're not paying anything. Mm-hmm. But then also they're having to pay gas and wear and tear on the vehicle to get there. So there's this algorithm that they use, whether it's scientific or Kentucky windage, as to whether they bring it to us or haul it up to a MRF. But I'm thinking Traverse must not be paying much right now because our materials went up last quarter.
Yeah.
Or maybe more people recycling too. That might be that.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah, we'll go with that. That sounds good. Y'all take care.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you very much.
So there you go. That worked out well.
But you look at this and love your work that has all those increases.
Oh, thanks.
Really good job.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'll take credit.
Should take a lot of credit for those.
So right. Does the group think that, in general, this idea is worth pursuing, A, and B, should we designate me or Chris or someone else to perform that research, or should we get John Mitchell's head around this and see if he kind of agrees with that whole idea? He's a little more politically minded than the city engineer, so he might have a better way, or tell us not to do it at all, or... I don't know. What do y'all think?
Well, I think Marcus said that it was him and John that made most of the decision. So I think John has to be having his opinion would be valuable regardless. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could write up what we heard today and what we decide at this moment and send that to John and say,
yeah, I'd like to not have to wait another 3 months or whatever it is to get to hear from him. You know,
that's true.
I'd like to know his opinion on how. What kind of job they're already doing on this? Are we really going to add anything to the process? And if that's the case, then sure, it's something to pursue. If they already are doing as good a job as they think they need to do and maybe wouldn't pay that much attention to us anyway, then...
Well, I think that the thing with policy guidance, though, is it's not binding.
Exactly.
So it says most of the time, I worked in regulatory a long time, most of that kind of language is usually written as things like as practicable, to the maximum extent practical,
but
or whatever. But I think if we could come up with something and the count and the Board of Commissioners would approve it, I think it's there. Now, whether they ever use it or not, or how much it gets used, I think the groundwork is laid.
I think you're also establishing a culture, you know, that in Henderson County, these things are important to us as a county in construction.
That's exactly right.
And like with the architect is going
to
know.
And he's there for 3 years. Marcus might be gone this year.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But Henderson County is committed to sustainability.
Right, and that's what I mean by putting the groundwork in.
Right, so I think that's what this committee could do, would be to help develop that culture and that way of thinking. And I think it's okay to have somebody who's involved in politics involved, but politics can't drive good practice and good suggestions. And they may be able to determine when it's best to initiate them. But
when I said John Mitchell and said the thing about politics, he's just very in tune with what his bosses want and don't want, and they are the elected officials.
That's true, but we're the community. We're the community, and they work for us. And so it's again, you know, the whole political paradigm, the whole government structure, all those is shifting, you know, for more grassroots input and determination, and it is more grassroots driven at this point. And so, you know, Henderson County is maybe not as progressive. I mean, you look at Seattle, you look at other areas where they put in so many of these kinds of ideas. I mean, in Seattle, there's that culture. And so I could see this group being the ones to help facilitate that. Because we're not going to be able to enforce. You know, we can help write policies and all that kind of stuff. But
it sounds like they're already thinking. I mean, it's in their minds.
What's required. A lot of this is required.
But I think you made the point that they go beyond what's...
I don't know. I kept hearing cost.
I think a non-binding policy gives them a chance to go beyond the minimum.
Yeah, it has something.
It's really
they don't have to look at cost only.
And something that the board has approved
rather
than just what may be
in
their
mind. I
think
it has considerable merit. You know, this is a standard. This is a higher standard.
Yeah.
And it costs the minimum.
And think about 1 or 2 years from now when Clark Nexus is the architect of record, when their gig is up, they're going to have to go through that again with another architect. And
that's
if
right.
this is in place, and that's part of the documents that the architects are responding to with this 3-year contract, we're going to end up hiring someone that the pool of people that they're hiring are seeing that. And they're all responding and saying, you know, maybe the company, the architect, the big architecture firm, like, passed over Henderson County because they didn't. It's like, oh, that. So we've missed out on all those big, beautiful minds that could have been here because that wasn't in place.
Well, I think it's worth doing, but I think it sounds like it's falling on you and Chris. It's certainly not an area I can contribute anything to. But, yeah, go for it.
And I was thinking one way to... I think getting John's counsel is a great idea. I do think if we had some suggestions rather than just going to John and say, hey, what do you think about if we did something? If we said, okay, well, here's a policy statement from Charlotte, or here's a policy statement from Hickory, you know, somewhere, it would be helpful because then you have some kind of fuel for the fire to say, well, yeah, that might work, or that might, we're already doing that through these methods, because maybe there's something from the planning side that Marcus doesn't know about that isn't already in process. I don't know. A little bit of devil's advocate, but I think...
And I would try and find examples from places that are more local to the southeast that have a similar size population. Because going to somewhere that's really progressive with their policies but humongous is not going to benefit
right.
us
at
all.
Right.
Because the money difference is going to be a big deal on that. But
yeah, I agree.
But... I think that's a good idea.
So, what do we do?
What was the phrase? Policy statement?
Policy statement.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, do we need a motion? If so, what is the motion?
No, there's still nothing there. It's just me or Chris volunteering to create the dang thing.
Okay.
do the
football. At least we get lunch every so often.
Yeah. Fueled by Mountain Dilly.
Do worse.
Do you need it? Do you want me to ask John to come to our next meeting after you've come up with kind of a draft or at least a summary, and give that to him in between now and the next meeting, and then he comes?
Yeah, 3 months away.
Comes to the next meeting.
We could have something by then.
But you want me to ask him to come after you've given something to me to share with him? So he kind of has a background.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we sort of caught Marcus off guard. And,
right.
And one hand, that was good because we didn't give any preconception of what we were driving at. But on the other hand, it made it hard to zero in on the question.
Right.
I mean, the cat's out of the bag now. Marcus knows, so.
And I think he answered a lot of what.
And he did great.
Yeah, but
I mean, it was hard to, without telling him, you know, or us really knowing what we wanted specifically.
Well, maybe a way to shortcut
it. If it started with policy statement, we could be gone by now.
Maybe a way to shortcut it is to Rachel, if you don't mind, if we put Rachel up to the task of saying, hey, put a bug in, Marcus is here to run that by a Reader's Digest version of what we talked about today, if John thinks that would work. But I think Marcus could probably convey that message or that intention.
Whatever we prepare, we could send to Marcus at the same time.
Yeah, but it'd be good to know if John was like, oh, I need to talk to Phil and Chris.
Yeah.
So that.
But
I
do think it would be a good use of time to just maybe 3 or 4 bullet points summarize kind of what's driving the idea of creating a policy statement, because it is very high level.
Yeah.
It's very high level, and it's very hard to understand and drill down into without asking all those questions. And I think we could absolutely sit here with John for a good hour or two.
Easy.
Getting into that, just because he has a really wide grasp on a lot of this, but I think narrowing it down into a couple of bullet points would just be really helpful. But that's up to you guys. That's just my...
Will you look at me?
Well.
Because you're writing something.
I teach. I learn not to make eye contact.
Right. All right, so what I'm hearing is, sounds like Chris or Philip is going to bullet something, kind of a summary of our intention or our thought process to get John's feedback.
Yes.
And then we go from there. You know, and of course, at any time, if something pops up or you're in the grocery store or church, whatever, driving in traffic, you can always send an email to everybody on the committee.
Not when you're driving in traffic.
Not when you're driving in traffic.
That's the only time I send emails.
That's right. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, our communication is not only resigned to a quarterly meeting in this building, is all I'm trying to say. I don't have any updates from the litter control program that Jerry was talking about, I think the ESB was working on, so we'll just table that until more information comes forward.
Liz's reports on Kudzu were good.
Good.
Yeah, I think the question then is, what do we do going forward on Kudzu?
Yeah.
And I think Liz and I would like to talk to her more about what those next steps might be. And I'd be happy if anybody else has got ideas. But it's clear that I think you need to make sure that you can identify, if you're going to get the board involved, that make the case for change or make the case for what you need to do, what is what you need to do, and how might you go about it, and recognizing that there's probably a little budget for it.
Yeah. But Flat Rock is certainly far from the only area in the county with kudzu.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, Liz and I went to help the Kudzu Warriors of Conserving Carolina down at the Norman Wilder Forest. So we learned hands-on how to cut the crowns out of the ground. So we had a 2-hour lesson in that, hands-on. And talk to Kudzu Warriors, and they do a lot of good stuff there, but it's very localized, and, you know, they only cover so much ground.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The other thing you can do along those lines is we can work on setting up workshops or talks and having them at the library or at the college, and just inviting people to come and learn about the program, and have the partners already doing it give the program, but just set up the structure for that, for us to be a vehicle to get that out to the community, so we could think about it from that perspective if that's something that's important to the group.
Yeah, they're working on something similar in Laurel Park, maybe even some demonstration projects, you know, before and after kind of thing. But a lot of it comes back to what you as the homeowner or property owner want to do, because there's no municipality that's going to come say, hey, Ryan, I'll get rid of all that kudzu for you, and the English ivy at the same time. So what do y'all think about quarterly meetings? Is it good? Stick with it? We've
totally up to y'all.
I think it only works if things happen between times.
The other thing we had on our agenda that we haven't touched on was the Bee City. I know Rachel and I are working on some stuff around that, so we can convey that through email.
I can just tell you real quick. So my goal was to put in the application for us to become Bee County by December, and it just hasn't happened. I haven't been able to pull it all together, and part of that is writing, which you guys know about, that internal policy that would be kind of along what y'all were talking about with creating some kind of internal policy that we have landscaping and pollinator-friendly land management that happens only on county properties. So anytime we contract services for mowing or land management, is what I would kind of categorize it under, that it promotes bee and pollinator-friendly practices only on county properties. So I'm trying to culminate that. It has to go into a couple other places in existing county plans. So I'm trying to figure out when the timing is right on that, because you have to renew your Bee City stuff every January. So I didn't want to put it in November or December, and then...
Makes sense.
I wasn't really sure what they wanted me to do. So I may just push it to January or February. But I want to get it in before budget happens, because that'll dominate a lot of the conversations at the board meetings in the spring. So it's still happening behind the scenes. So sorry for the delay, but
that's okay.
We'll get it.
It's a process.
I know. Just so focused on recycling that I can't see through the paper. Anyway.
All right. Does anyone else have anything further for the good of the group?
I do have... Oh, no, I took them.
Oh.
Here, I do have a couple copies of the Christmas the holiday recycling campaign. If anybody wants to take some copies of the flyers, the press release came out in the paper today. That just talks about the different things that are happening throughout the community for holiday recycling, because it's a little bit different than everyday recycling.
Mm-hmm.
Our food waste stuff has been going really, really well at the convenience center. The weight has at least tripled, if not more, probably with all the pumpkins. We've gotten so many pumpkins. That's probably gone way, way up with the weight, but that program is going really well, and we had the composting workshops. We had two of them, and they were really well attended, got great feedback. We're going to be doing a bunch more composting and vermicomposting workshops in the spring. I'm working on a series of composting workshops at breweries, so stay tuned for that.
Nice.
Help me come up with a catchy name that's not too alcohol-themed. So all of that's going really well, but if you guys have any suggestions or thoughts on some other programming for recycling and stuff, let me know.
Beers and banana peels.
Oh, that's a good one. I'm going to write that down.
All right, everyone. Thanks for coming to today's meeting. Our next meeting, is it March?
It would be. So this is
March
1st. So January, February, March would be your quarterly meeting.
Yeah. Well, that's when we'll reconvene, if not before.
That's the first Thursday?
Yeah.
It is.
March 1st.
I will let you know. I will be gone. I'm not here.
Okay. And we can move it around, whatever we need to do. So
yeah, all right.
We'll avoid the weather. So.
See everyone next year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a happy holiday.
Thanks. Yeah.